I was interviewed in Roswell, as was Don. As a matter of fact, that was the last time we saw each other, wasn't it, Don?
That's correct, Dan, yes.
July of last year.
Mm-hmm.
They spent
and
about 3 days with us.
I was interviewed for over an hour, and I had provided them with materials. I answered questions after that. And then to have me called not just a promoter once, but twice, to have them use the word myth
mm-hmm.
about Roswell and mythology and stuff, and the, you know, the look in the eye, the snideness of the remarks that went along with it, I was astonished. I mean, it was bad enough that there was all the stuff from the SETI cultists, as I call them. You may recall that Seth Shostak and I did a little three-hour tour on your show.
You sure did.
And you remember also how the audience voted about that
mm-hmm.
one, 57-33-10. and then to hear them, you know, here's a show that's called UFOs, Seeing is Believing. The only thing that the SETI cultists saw was Dr. Tarter couldn't recognize the moon. Now, that tells you something about their knowledge about visual observation, doesn't it?
Yeah, did you supply them with the Jesse Marcel tape? Because that was one of the best segments of the whole hours.
It seems crazy, and now I regret it, I guess. I got asked a couple months ago, maybe, if I had any tapes that showed me on it. And I said, oh, there's a ton of them around here. They're not well cataloged. They don't have a secretary or anything.
Right.
Well, you know, I'll look through them and see what I've got. So I let them know that, you know, I don't have the time, but I've got 57 tapes here that I've pulled out. And some, you know, hadn't been looked at for 15 years. But and I sent them a box, FedEx no less, of 57 tapes. And I did see that right after, what did I get, 30 seconds the first time around to answer one question? Then they had me on a tape with, I think it was Lisa. That was from my tape. And there were a couple of other little bits and pieces, including the Jesse Marcel stuff. You know, they mixed two of those, actually.
Well, you know, I was glad they devoted 2 hours of prime time. I was glad that they did the subject matter. It was, unfortunately, too elementary. And as I've called it, Stan, it was UFOs 101. And,
well, it wasn't even that. It was minus 101 for the second. Now, it was clearly a hatchet job about Roswell and about to let the SETI people get away. Let me give you a specific example. They pointed out in loud voices that, gee whiz, the Voyager spacecraft would take 73,000 years to get to the nearest star. And that's one of those things that's true, but totally meaningless. It doesn't have a propulsion system on it. It hasn't since it left the vicinity of the Earth. It's coasting.
Even if it had a propulsion system, they need to think in terms of advanced civilizations, which would have come up with a better way.
Well, I worked on that. That's what's particularly infuriating here for me, to just refer to me as a UFO promoter as opposed to researcher or investigator or nuclear physicist or somebody who worked on fusion propulsion systems for deep space travel 43 years ago, mind you. And those systems would get up close to the speed of light, I might add. Fusion allows you to kick particles out the back end of a rocket that have 10 million times as much energy per particle as you can get in a dumb old chemical rocket. And to ignore all that, I mean, I was delighted to see Dr. Kaku get in the last word.
Right.
But he's jumping into the far future. I'm saying, look, I worked on fission nuclear rockets, much more efficient than chemical rockets, the fusion rockets. How dare you act as if these guys who know nothing about advanced flight technology, that remind me of, I normally cite three different astronomers to illustrate how accurate they are about flight. Simon Newcomb, great astronomer of the 19th century, the only way man would ever fly would be with the help of a balloon. He said that in a published paper 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight. Dr. Bickerton, 20 years later, it would be impossible to give anything sufficient energy to get it into orbit around the Earth. And then Dr. Campbell in 1941, he calculated the required initial launch weight of a rocket able to get a man to the moon and back would have to be a million tons. He was only off by a factor of 300 million.
That's all.
And these are the guys we should listen to about something about which they know nothing? Truly incredible.
Now, Stan, when we come back at the half mark here, and you, Don, as well, I want to talk with both of you about where do we go from here in the field of ufology. But, Don, in the minute and a half I have, what was your whole reaction to that program?
Well, I just find it amazing that they spent three full days with us down in New Mexico, and in an effort to try to enlighten them as to this being more than just a UFO festival. Stan had presented a lecture. My partner Tom Carey and I had presented another lecture. They were not in attendance. They were out covering the costume contests and the parade and the very Roswell festival that commemorates this event. So they had an agenda. It was quite clear. And we insisted to take them out to the base, which we did. They did more interviews there. And then we took them out on a separate day out to the debris field where we had conducted the archaeological project just 2.5 years ago.
Right.
And we had all the remaining excavation sites and all the flagged areas still waiting for us to return and complete the project. And yet, if you go back to the documentary,
nothing.
The site was pristine. They intentionally avoided demonstrating that there was any scientific research being conducted at the site. In other words, that no one has bothered to come back because this is a myth. That's what I found so incredulous, that they had an agenda. And this was a typical bait-and-switch format. They set us up the first hour, and I believe it, though, the entire program was to take out Roswell.